This week's episode of Still Untitled is brought to you by Backblaze. Get peace of mind knowing all your files are secured with Backblaze. What is Backblaze? It's an unlimited cloud backup for Macs and PCs. Backblaze backs up documents, music, photos, videos, drawings, projects, whatever you need. And you can access it from anywhere in the world, all for just $5 a month. You can even get a free 15-day trial. Just make sure you visit backblaze.com/stilluntitled so they know where you came from and continue supporting our show. Start protecting all your most important files today with Backblaze. Now on with the show.
Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Hey, we are in three different locations now, hence the lack of video.
Guys, I'm not wearing pants.
I didn't want to say, but me neither.
I am wearing both pants and a shirt like a human. I am also my earphones. As you can imagine, I travel a tremendous amount. I have tried all sorts of different earphones, and I'm very pleased. I just discovered that Bose now makes their quiet comfort noise-canceling in-earbuds in a Bluetooth wireless mode, in a Bluetooth wireless form, and I'm absolutely loving them. Yeah, they're so in order to get more battery life, they have this sort of neck ring that you wear around your neck that's...
Yeah.
Pretty unobtrusive. And on the bus, man, it cuts out all the bus noise entirely.
So they're neck buds, not earbuds.
Right.
Neck buds.
I always, when I see people wear those, they always remind me of like big spoilers on cars, like a handbag. Right.
Wow, that doesn't bode well.
So I have two sets of earbuds, two sets of headphones that I travel with. I have a pair of just Bluetooth earbuds that are, they're neck buds, basically. They just have a cord between the two, but mm-hmm. you can fold them over on themselves, so they basically just tuck up under my hair, and it goes right between my ears.
Oh, nice.
And they last like 3 or 4 hours. I think I reviewed them for tested years ago. But then I also have a pair of Plantronics, like on-ear sound-canceling headphones that I take on the airplane that are, like, they make airplane travel much more pleasant. Like, that noise-canceling, not having that drone is awesome.
Oh, no, Julie and I, my wife and I, race to get the headphones in before we have to hear that song on Virgin.
Oh, that's always the goal. If somebody's talking to me on the airplane, I'm like, look, I'm sorry, I can't have this conversation right now. They're about to play the bad song.
Oh, God. And also, I have a set of Bluetooth headphones that gives me 4 hours, and it enrages me. It annoys me because it's I can't get across the country on a flight.
Yeah.
So the Bose is 10 hours of time.
So you can go almost to Hong Kong and back. That's good. There you go.
But I buried the lead. I am in Richmond, Virginia right now. I was in Fayetteville last night. We've just started the Brain Candy tour yesterday.
Oh, wow. So you've been gone for about a week now, right?
Actually just about a week. I left last Tuesday to head to Reno to do a corporate job for BRP Ski-Doo, a snowmobile company. Jamie and I appeared together for them.
Wow.
Yeah, that was really fun, actually. Look, he and I might not get along on a day-to-day basis, but working together is something that's pretty much, like, we understand each other's patterns in a way that is like falling off a log when we get together sometimes.
Is this the first time you've seen him in a while?
I think that we did a corporate appearance together like 7 or 8 months ago. And this is the first time I've seen him in that period of time. And what's hilarious is there's never any ceremony about it. It's like, hey. we're like Foghorn Leghorn and the dog from that Bugs Bunny commercial.
Bunny
cartoon.
Norm, you and I worked together almost as long as Jamie and Adam did. I guess we started working together, what, like 2005 or 2006?
I think so, yeah. If we had to do some type of event and were put in a room and had to dance, perform, I think we could fall into rhythm.
I mean, like when we did the live show in October, we kind of rolled right back into it. It's when you work with somebody for a long time, I see that. Like, it makes sense, right?
Yeah, no, you get used to their patterns. And that's actually a nice segue into the fact that I'm doing this tour without Jamie. He doesn't want to tour anymore. And so my partner on stage and collaborator in content for Brain Candy is Michael Stevens from Vsauce. And Tested viewers know this. And our director is a good friend of mine, Michael Weber, who's an amazing magician, magic designer, and director. And so I left Reno from the snowmobile gig on Thursday, got to Fayetteville on Friday, and we spent really like 12 hours, 14 hours on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday just finishing the builds and doing some builds and choreographing and refining and writing and getting our way into this show. And we had our first performance last night.
That's, oh, man. I would never have thought that a show comes together like that.
Understand. We've been working on an outline for a year. We have had ideas we've been bouncing back and forth for months. We've had structures that we've gone through. But ultimately, we ended up with so many props, so many pieces in the show that we do that require motion and activation, experimentation and demonstration, that there was a certain point at which you just had to get among the stuff and start writing into what it is to use it. Right. You can't do that in the abstract. So that's what really we spent 5 days doing and building several brand new pieces for the show.
Some of the photos you shared were not in the venue you performed in last night, but like it looked almost like a hotel, rented hotel ballroom or something. Can you describe
So when you want to rehearse your show, sometimes renting out a big theater that would house your show is prohibitively expensive, and that was the case here. It was going to cost us a crap ton of money. But in Fayetteville, we were in this lovely complex that had a convention center and a theater and all sorts of other stuff, and the conference center gave us a great deal on just this big old room for 2 days where we could use power tools and we could set up everything from this show travels with 2 18-wheelers full of equipment. We were able to unload all of it, unpack it all, and really start talking about it and getting it all going.
And do all the blocking and before this, you hadn't done any rehearsals with Michael, right?
Michael's and my sole amount of work together had been pretty much all the videos you've seen on Tested and on Vsauce. That was like 4 days of us playing around together. But one of the things we discovered really immediately upon working with each other is that we have very different yet super overlapping sensibilities in terms of humor. It's very simpatico and it's very easy and it's lovely. I mean, I really am enjoying this collaboration in a way that I find super invigorating. I also discovered something about Michael Stevens that I didn't realize until I was on the bus last night talking to Michael Weber about it, and I realized, oh my God, Michael Stevens somehow never mansplains.
Wow, really?
Right. No, he never does. And this is, look, I'm a guilty mansplainer. It's a problem I have to work on. I have to watch it. But Michael, no matter what he's explaining, no matter how deep he's explaining it, he's never pretending ever to even slightly more knowledge than he has.
Huh.
Or that audience, he gives the audience the benefit of the doubt. And
yes.
They have it. Yeah.
I think those would be the two components of mansplaining, that you're pretending that you knew about emoluments all along when you just read about it on you know, HuffPo, and also assuming that your audience is dumber than they actually are. And it's a combination of those two things. Michael's never doing any of that. So it's been really, really wonderful. And honestly, sitting at lunch with him, if you're a fan of both of us and you have a fantasy of what it's like when we get together, it's exactly like that. Like, we're sitting there and he's like, you know, it turns out that particles, when they're exposed to blah, 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 do the blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, right, right. There was that study with the fluid dynamics. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And we start going, it's constant.
Oh, that's awesome. A little bit different.
You're talking about another show. like that whole like that's something you didn't get to do last time. Yeah, because both of you were just deep wells of knowledge.
Yeah, and the show is really, really, really fun. I mean, last night was the first execution of it, and it did not feel like a first execution of a show. I know that it's going to change over the next couple of weeks as we start to refine our way into it and get more comfortable with the material, and I just can't wait. We left Fayetteville last night on our buses. It's only a 3-hour drive to Richmond, Virginia, so we pulled in at about 4 a.m. I briefly woke up as the bus parked and went back to sleep. And I've got the next 48 days out here on the road.
Wow.
I know.
So is this all new material, Adam? Everything from scratch for this one? So if people have seen you before, then this is a whole new show.
There is nothing you've ever seen me or Michael do on stage here. Yeah, it's all absolutely brand new.
Cool.
Also, hey, wait, check this out. Thing 1 and Thing 2 turned 18 yesterday.
Oh, holy cow.
That's right, yeah. They're twins. That's right.
Well, yeah. I guess parenting's done. Congratulations. empty nesting.
Isn't that insane?
Wow.
Yeah.
So I guess when we started working with you, they were 14? Is that right?
Was that...
must have been 2012.
2012. They were 13.
It's amazing how much of a, even in just the 4 years that Norm and I have been around, how much they went from kind of, boys and now they're really
boys
young men.
Boys to men.
Yeah. I wish I could remember a Boys to Men song off the top of my head. I feel like I'm really failing.
No, I can't either. We have a gag in the show using diaper genies. Not a poopy gag, but we use diaper genies as one of our props. And
a diaper genie.
Genie is, when you have kids, a diaper genie is an endless plastic bag. It's like 25 feet long, and it's about 8 inches in diameter, and you use twisties, and it's a very efficient way to bag up dirty diapers very quickly.
So basically you can make a diaper caterpillar that then you can drag out to the trash. They're also really, really shoddily made. So ours lasted almost exactly 2 years and 2 months. And when it broke, we were like, well, I guess we have to get out of diapers because I wasn't buying another one.
Well, so we're using that and we're talking about diapers. And I one of the things I said as a parent that I was sad about was you change so many diapers. You see so much literal crap that... it would really be nice if there was like a ceremony you could have on the last diaper, but you never know when the last diaper is going to happen. You think you know, you think there's like a last diaper, and then there's accidents and you go back to diapers, and it's a very fuzzy landing. And given how many thousands of diapers one changes as a parent, it would be nice to have like a medal of the oven ceremony.
Yeah.
But while we were talking about that, I did realize that there are some lasts that I remember, and one of them was shortly before we started working together on Tested, in late 2010, when Thing 1 was just around 10 and a half, 11 years old, he came upstairs to our bedroom in the middle of the night, having had a nightmare, and he asked if he could stay in our bed.
Oh man.
And you know, at this point, he's pretty big, and Thing 1 specifically was a total sweaty bed hog, right? So like he'd get in, and he was like 140 degrees, not really, but like just that kid sweat like nobody's business. So it was never awesome, but I remember thinking, this is the last time he sleeps in our bed.
Wow!
And I'm like, get in here, buddy. And I like wrap my arms around him. And it was like, I got to savor the last time, I got to snuggle my kid, which is, it's an absolutely rare pleasure.
God. Yeah. I can't even imagine the last, like right now I'm seeing 3 nights a week where we have a nightmare. The floor is made of lava. So that sounds okay, but also really, really sad.
But now it's the flip side, right? Now that they're 18, now you get to look forward to all the firsts that you can do.
Yeah, totally. I mean, Julia and I, we talk about it all the time. Like, can you imagine, like, in a few years, we'll meet them in whatever city they live in and have dinner with them? Wow. Like, they're going to be, they're people, right? They're out there in the world. It's amazing.
Wow.
Go ahead.
No, while you're out there in the world, do you have a bucket list for this tour, these 48 cities of things? Have you had a chance to think about it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I don't want to give away too much because I'm going to cover each of these on social and with some photo essays and stuff. But there are some aircraft boneyards that are in some of the cities that I will be touring through. And I plan to make it to a couple of those. There are a couple of so I always also check Atlas Obscura, the website Atlas Obscura, for cool things to do in various cities.
Yeah.
And I've been making a list. I've been keeping an ongoing list. I've got some stuff. We're going to do some tested coverage while I'm out on the road. I'll be at South by Southwest. I'm going to do some storytelling for getting kids interested in making. We're going to visit some cities to see what they're doing in that regard. I've actually got a very full dance card on this tour. Some tours don't do a lot. Other tours, it's just thrift shopping. This one is a mix of everything.
So this is the first. Well, I guess you went out with Jamie for a short tour after the show ended, right?
Just after. Yeah, we wrapped MythBusters in, I think, November 11th, 2015. And I think by November 13th, we started a 32-city tour.
So,
and that was the last tour with Jamie.
So this is the first time you're coming onto this having not been working on the show for like, really, really hard. Like, usually you work on the show really, really hard, and then as soon as your show goes on hiatus, you would get on the bus and go out on tour. This is the first time you've had, like, kind of not a break, but, you know, you've not been going just balls to the wall right up until the moment that it's time to go. And do you think that puts you in a position to maybe take more advantage of being away or?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I was thinking about that. Yeah, MythBusters was such a constant brain suck of all of my faculties that I would find pockets of time to deal with upcoming tours while filming. But it was always sort of robbing from Peter to pay Paul in terms of my creative output. It was trying to find the right spaces to be able to do those shifts.
Yeah. So I think the first time you went on tour, you kind of did some paper craft and like you rode a bicycle or you kind of treated it almost like a vacation where you were on a cruise that just happened to be on land and you had to work.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. And this time, I've had a lot more mental space. Michael Weber, Michael Stevens, and I started collaborating on this, God, like 8 or 10 months ago. Mm-hmm. And we've been meeting fairly regularly, either in Los Angeles where they live or San Francisco, to refine. But there has been a lot more space to deal with the tour, which means that once I'm out on tour, it's not like I just want to veg on the bus all day long.
Yeah.
You know, that was the other thing is that MythBusters was we shot that show full time all year round. So when I had a break, I really needed it. You know, those days out on tour, like my recuperation. But out here, it feels like it's a totally new world, right? Like, you know, I just don't have the same, demands upon my energy. They're probably just as vigorous, but they're differently spaced.
Did you bring anything to scratch your itch for making? Any model kits? Anything to occupy your time on the bus?
No, but because we were going to be building so much once I arrived, the tour toolkit is all my tools. So my head carpenter put together a list of ideal tools, and we bought a few, but I pretty much sent out, like, you know, 150 pounds of my hand tools, which is great because it means I know what is in our kit. And, you know, being able to make something is only half of it. Having access to the tools you need is the other half. And it's really difficult to, like, if you need an awl and someone only has a mat knife, that's a tough problem to solve. So on this one, I have the full complement of everything that I need. And honestly, I think that we'll be continuing to refine and rebuild stuff for this show throughout the run. I don't mean like every day, but you know, as we beat stuff up, we're going to find ways to refine it.
How about the audience reaction? It's a different crowd. I imagine a lot of the same types of fans, but because they're coming to see you and also Michael Stevens.
So Fayetteville has Fort Bragg. We had a lot of military families in the audience last night. It was a great crowd. It was pretty much a full house, fantastic crowd. Fascinatingly, when I looked out into the audience on tours with Jamie and I saw a lot of kids and I saw a lot of families and older folks, older folks, people my age. I believe this is not a rigorous study by any means, but I saw a lot more 20s and 30s aged people in the audience, really 20s. I think Mr. Stevens is bringing the millennials out to us on the road. So it's a different demographic. The crowd was good and geeky. They were right with us as we were talking about like complex and fun stuff that we were thrilled by, and the crowd was too. And it was, you know, it's like you can only block so much. When you have a lot of audience participation, everything's going to change when you bring someone up on the stage. And that was really fun to have workshopped the audience participation bits without audience members enough to know the beats, but bring someone up and watch how they change and watch how they expand and elongate.
Hey, don't give yourself too little credit here. That's also the tested audience, too. We got...
Yes.
Watching the show.
To be sure. And actually at the meet and greet last night, just so many people kept on saying, I love what you guys are doing on Tested. I love the one day builds. There will be, I think we are filming a couple of builds out here on the road, just to keep the juices flowing. I don't want to give too much away. What else has been going on? Can I bring up a couple of movies I saw recently?
Yeah, of course.
Yes.
Okay. I watched The Accountant with Ben Affleck because I was on an airplane, where he plays like the Asperger's killer who's also an accountant.
Okay. I'm sorry.
How was that?
Yeah. No, I'm not kidding. He plays someone who really has like autism spectrum disorder. And he's also a hired killer because his dad kind of trained him to be. Spoiler alert, sorry. Look, ultimately, it is a bizarre, totally insane movie in which, like, Anna Kendrick is the heroine, and she looks like she's 10 next to Ben Affleck, and they don't ever quite make them romantic, but they don't not, so there's times when it's weirdly both paternal and strangely romantic.
Oh, that's weird. Okay.
Yeah.
Is it like her and Clooney and Up in the Air?
Oh, God. I loved her and Clooney and Up in the Air. And I thought that was a perfect – I didn't find that creepy or weird in any way.
Oh, see, I found there to be a weird relationship that you weren't sure was supposed to be a father-daughter kind of analog or a romantic thing with her and Clooney and Up in the Air.
Oh, I was always really clear that she was a child, like, effectively, to him.
I mean, that's why the hints of the relationship were uncomfortable, I guess.
Yeah. And then, so I read this wonderful analysis of why Zack Snyder's films seem to miss a lot. And it was that they build moments, but they don't build drama. Like, every shot is, like, the culmination of some huge thing, and Superman's there with his cape flowing. But they don't do the work to earn your emotional release at how beautiful this moment on screen is.
Which works great for movie trailers, but not necessarily for when you're watching a two-hour narrative.
Exactly. So in the hotel in Fayetteville, I only had regular television, so I had to just watch whatever was on. And I watched an hour of Tarzan.
Oh, no. I'm so sorry.
Margot Robbie and Sam Jackson and the other guy.
Yes.
The other guy.
Yeah. The guy who plays Tarzan from True Blood.
Yes.
Skarsgård. Yeah, I think he's fantastic. I think he plays the character really well, but that's a mess of a movie.
Dude, that movie is a surrealist masterpiece. I mean, the last 40 minutes are indecipherable. There are shots where I feel like you're just cutting in stuff from other movies, and I feel like like nothing makes any sense. And I felt so sorry for the actors and having to deliver some of the stuff they were doing. It was crazy. And every shot looked like it was from a trailer. It felt like a trailer that I watched for an hour.
So I watched, speaking of movies that you shouldn't watch, I watched Now You See Me 2 the other day.
Oh, God. What were you thinking?
Why? Did you see the first one, Will?
Yeah. look, I like Woody Harrelson, and Zuckerberg's good,
Zuckerberg. Oh my God, poor Jesse Eisenberg.
I know. I feel bad for that. but yeah, I had HBO Go in a hotel room, and I was like, I want to watch a movie tonight. And that movie's not good. It should no. It's in fact, actually, it's so far from not good that you would think, I thought it might roll over. I thought it might be a bad movie that was entertaining, and it's just a bad movie. So,
well, so that, again, I think that's what Tarzan is. Tarzan is a movie that's so bad, it's showgirls bad, and it's almost worth watching, but not alone. If you're alone, you'll just want to like carve your initials into your arm. You should watch it with other people so that you can laugh and taunt its ludicrousness.
Did you watch John Carpenter of Mars?
Yeah.
Is it the same level of weird as that movie got?
No. I think John Carpenter of Mars, actually, there's a good movie there. And that movie, like, is made by a good filmmaker. I mean, that's Andrew Stanton.
Andy Stanton. Let me sing the praises of John Carpenter of Mars. Because while I think that the performances are often messily off the mark, I think that it is one of the loveliest movies. Like, as far as creating a genuine alien world and alien characters, that movie is gorgeous.
Well, and stuff we've not seen, right?
Yeah.
Jupiter Ascending. I think those are both movies made by really talented filmmakers and people who can build crazy science fiction worlds, but maybe with not the best scripts.
Both of those movies seemed like they had green screen actor disease, where they hired actors who maybe aren't great on green screens.
That's certainly possible, yeah.
You mentioned Woody Harrelson. Adam, did you guys see the photo release yesterday?
No. From the new Han Solo movies, first day of shooting.
Yes.
Woody Harrelson in it?
Yeah. Which is a little awkward. It's a little weird.
He's in Star Wars?
That's, like, I don't mind famous people you recognize being in Star Wars, but there are certain actors that they have their own persona that just maybe takes over too much.
They do have their persona, but I think that, look, I think of Woody Harrelson as a genuinely excellent actor, obviously, who I think, I get this feeling, this is not based on anything, so take it for what it's worth, but I get the feeling that with a strong and with a strong director who's got a clear vision, Harrelson will just deliver great performances, and if you just count on him doing what he does, he's going to do what he does.
The perfect confluence of that is Ed TV. It's Harrelson being Harrelson, but in exactly the right role.
Right. And I mean, I thought he was unfathomably great in True Detective. I was astounded by that performance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And obviously you can't tell much from just a cast photo, but I think they got the looks right. Donald Glover.
Donald Glover, and Donald Glover now is in everything. He's going to do Simba in the live-action Jon Favreau remake of Lion King.
Can we talk about those live-action Disney remakes for a minute?
Yeah, for sure.
So I have been, my mental state on those has gone from, well, this is weird. Why are they making shot-for-shot remakes of these classic animated movies? That doesn't seem very good. I took my daughter to see Lego Batman this weekend.
Yeah.
And they had a Beauty and the Beast trailer before. And the trailer with Emma Watson is captivating. Like, it is.
Really?
It is. Like, if It is. It literally looks like they're making a shot-for-shot live-action remake of the movie. They have the scene with Gaston jumping up on the table and flipping the table over on his buddy, and they have the dance scene with the Angela Lansbury song and the whole thing. And like, on one hand, it seems creatively bankrupt, and I'm really cynical about it. But on the other hand, it looks like an amazing piece of filmmaking.
I have not watched any of those trailers because I've been too afraid that it would just horrify me in the uncanny valley.
Well, so my daughter went from, like, she was like, she, the, immediately preceding that trailer, she's like, this boring, Dad, because there were a ton of trailers before a kids movie. And then she saw that and was captivated. She was like, I really want to see that. When can we go see that? And I said, well, good news, because we can go home and watch that movie right now.
Oh, really? It's available now?
No. The anime. We went home and watched the animated version.
Right.
Because yeah, I don't want her to see some live action thing before she sees the real movie.
Yeah.
But like, what's your? Sorry, I've been rambling for a little while. But what's your? Like, how do you guys feel? It feels really weird to me to take these classic animated films and then live actionize them, even though it's kind of a neat thing.
I think it's a good exercise. I think really. I think, remember when Annie Leibovitz did those ad campaigns and she put celebrities in the roles of Disney characters, like Scarlett Johansson was Cinderella, and then there are these beautiful photographs. I feel like it's that type of exercise brought to filmmaking, and it's for a new generation. And I mean, you can say it's a money-making grab, and it is, but it's, I think there's still interesting films.
I assumed it was to extend copyright or something too, but then they do Sleeping Beauty, which is only 20 years old.
But I feel like when I see that, it might be beautiful, and I'm very interested to watch the trailers now for Bella La Bête. But I feel like the shot for shot remakes make me sad because there's only so much you're going to be able to do with it. So there's only so far it can be taken creatively. Now, I could be wrong about that. I could be totally wrong about that. But I feel like it's a restriction that seems to me calculated to not drift too far. And granted, when you drift too far, things can get bad, but they can also get really, really interestingly, fascinatingly great.
I don't know, just to be clear.
I'm just waiting for the live action Finding Nemo. It's going to come out.
Some poor bastard.
You could film that in a couple of fish tanks if you had all the sets.
I just Googled this, and Vox is saying it's a carefully edited remake of the 1991 trailer. The one that I just saw, it's the Beauty and the Beast final trailer. But it seems like the movie is maybe not a shot for shot remake. It's unclear.
Oh, okay.
So it's maybe just the trailer was the remake.
So a few weeks ago, I interviewed Guillermo del Toro up in Toronto, and that will become available online at some point. But he asked me to watch a bunch of films in preparation for the interview, and one of them that I had not seen was Cocteau's original Beauty and the Beast, Bella La Bête. And I don't know if you guys have seen it.
No.
It is totally amazing.
The
30s.
Okay.
The beast makeup is mind-blowingly lovely and weird and other and complicated and intense. It's a really amazing piece. I learned a lot watching the list that Guillermo asked me to watch.
Yeah. It's 1946, and it's a beautiful.
Oh, okay. Movie.
Yeah, it's funny. That all comes full circle because, you know, Ron Perlman did a Beauty and the Beast TV
show. Yes, right, with Linda Hamilton. Wow. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
that was the late 80s?
Late 80s, early 90s. And then speaking of GDT, do you see the Hellboy news?
I did.
There's Hellboy news?
Well,
no, the news is there's no news. There's not going to ever be any more Hellboy news, which is... Yeah. The project is totally dead, and they really can't get it going.
He made his good faith effort. I think he polled on Twitter how many people would want to see it, and when it reached a certain amount of likes and retweets, and it far surpassed his benchmark, he met with all the principals, everyone that would be involved, and and it wasn't meant to be. So it's a good reason to go back and rewatch the two Hellboys that we did get to appreciate the fact that we got those movies.
I actually rewatched those recently, and they hold up spectacularly.
They really hold up spectacularly, and I want to give a special shout out to Luke Goss, who plays the villain in Hellboy 2. He plays Prince Nuada. He also played the villain in Blade 2, which is Guillermo's first. Was it his first or second? No, he did Mimic first, I think.
Blade 2 is Guillermo.
Yep. Blade 2 is Guillermo, and actually, I recently watched Blade 2, and it's great. And Luke Goss is a phenomenal villain. He's got a wonderful voice, a terrific sort of weird, sad, you know, he's a villain that draws you in even as he's merciless. And I think his Prince Nuada is one of my favorite villains. I agree with you. Hellboy and Hellboy 2 both totally stand up as phenomenal.
Yeah, very Shakespearean.
Donnie Yen is in Blade 2, right?
He is. Yeah. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. He is. Yeah. And Ron Perlman, by the way.
Yes.
So a few weeks ago, not to transition over to Donnie Yen, but I was watching and Every Threat Famer Painting came up on YouTube. That was the one about why Hong Kong action movies are.
Oh. Jackie Chan?
Jackie Chan one, thank you.
Yeah.
And it was about why Hong Kong action movies, why Jackie Chan's Hong Kong action movies are better than his American movies.
Go ahead, sorry.
Like, no, I was going to give a shout out to it here because I had tweeted about it and I'd forgotten, like, I watched that probably two years ago now and had completely forgotten about it, but it is full of a lot of cinematic truths about things like American action cutting right before the hit so that you don't see it and Hong Kong action showing the hit from multiple shots and you know, giving you a much better sense of the flow of the scene.
It's totally, I mean, and that feeling of, I've talked about this before, of the filmmaker not abandoning you in space.
Yeah.
Right. And in Hong Kong, they often do more wides so that you understand where everyone's standing.
Yeah.
And for my money, I think one of the best American action scenes ever is the fight scene between Tom Cruise and five guys in the first Jack Reacher film, which is covered very efficiently, minimal shot changes, but fantastic action. And by the way, Tarzan is the total opposite. Shot to shot, you don't know if you're in a flashback in another country in somebody's bus. You have no idea.
Yeah. And a lot of that's because they have to use the CG animals. But if you like the wide shot, lingering, let the action play out, fight scene, you're going to love John Wick 2, Adam.
Oh, that's great. Okay, I'm totally going to see it in the next week here on tour.
One final bit. It's Oscar season, and a lot of special effects companies are putting out their film reels. ILM's YouTube channel has 5 new videos out this week about the effects they did for Rogue One and Doctor Strange, and their amazing featurettes.
Oh, fabulous.
Really cool to watch.
Did you see the one they did for Rogue One? It was a couple of weeks ago now, but they did the scene breakdowns on Rogue One and showed what was real and what was composited. It's fascinating.
Oh, I have. Okay. I'm going to watch that right after this.
The other one I really want to see, and if it's out there, I'd love it if somebody tells me. I would love to see a breakdown on Kubo and the Two Strings to see what's real and what's digital and what they did with puppets and scenery and stuff like that. Because I watched that movie and I literally can't tell.
Yeah, no, that movie is so gorgeous and so beautiful. And there was a featurette about the making of it that didn't go deeply enough into the making of it. And it drove me a little crazy. I wanted more.
Yeah. Well, cool. Okay. Well, I guess that's as good a place as any to wrap up.
I wanted to say I'm sorry we don't have video this week. We're going to try and have it next week, but we are definitely going to keep the podcasts going while out on tour, so you guys won't have to wait for a few weeks before the next one.
This whole, like, just walk to my living room, to my office and sit in front of the microphone. Pretty good setup for podcasting, I got to say. There's something to be said about this. I have heat here and everything. It's very...
Well, next week you're going to have to comb your hair, Will, because I want some video, okay?
Okay, well, I'll see what I can do.
The pants can still be optional, but you athletes have to take a shower.
Okay, I suppose. I'll do my local news guy, you know, no pants and the jacket. So, you know,
brilliant.
It'll be fancy.
Awesome.
Well, have fun on the tour, Adam.
Thank you. Tested viewers, I'll see you out on the road. And Norman, Will, I'll talk to you guys next week.
You're posting stuff on social and photo galleries on the site and stuff?
Tons. Yeah, I'll be constantly uploading pictures of my adventures.
Cool. Okay.
All right, guys.
See y'all next week.
Thanks for listening to Still Untitled. We wouldn't be able to do what we do without your support and the support of our great advertisers. But in order to continue doing that, we need your help. So please go to podsurvey.com/untitled and take a quick anonymous survey that will help us get to know you a little better. That way we can show advertisers just how great you, our listeners, are. Plus, once you complete the survey, you can enter to win a $100 Amazon gift card. Again, that's podsurvey.com/untitled. podsurvey.com/untitled. Thanks for your help.